Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? I wanted to talk about the interview of Jake Tapper because I had been following this story for many days now. For more than a day, and since the Black Sea ship has been sunk, and I had seen some activity on the social media that was all claiming that Russians deny that it came from a Ukraine missile, that the ship was sunk from a Ukraine missile. According to what I was seeing on the social media, Russians were denying this, and they were like, no, it was just a fire, it wasn't a missile. And this was not true. I had seen the Russian statement, and they were saying, there's a fire, we are investigating the cause. So to me, if you are investigating the cause, you're not denying that it's a missile. Now, this was low-degree sewer type of the internet who were making these false statements. But now the false statement is in an interview with Zelensky, probably one of the CNN videos that will be most viewed this week. Jake Tapper makes it. Jake Tapper is a bizarre guy. Because this guy, he's been saying some false stuff before. Isn't he the guy who claimed that you can't have the WikiLeaks or you can't have leaked material, but it's okay if you're a journalist, which legally is absolutely ridiculous. In any case, I know this statement was made by CNN, but I don't remember if it was Tapper. In any case, this guy is bizarre because I remember back in the day when I was on the Drunken Peasants, I remember he had interacted on Twitter with the Drunken Peasants. That was Fredo. I mixed them a lot. Yeah, that was Fredo. Okay, so it wasn't him. In any case, Jake Tapper seemed like he was more open than most mainstream journalists. Perhaps it was an error of him, but I had seen him communicate with the Drunken Peasants, and I was like, oh my god, I'm now 1 degree remote from Jake Tapper. And it's not very often that you see mainstream media journalists be opened on Twitter to interact with anyone, because they know their position, they're in a war against us, and precisely they implement this double standard by which precisely Jake Tapper will not be called out, or I would be surprised if he got strongly called out. But this kind of misinformation that he published in order to denigrate the Russians, to make them look like they're in denial that the ship is sunk when it's not true, that is the kind of misinformation that if I was to do it, or if anyone on the right does it, or if Joe Rogan does it, they would get fact-checked. But Jake Tapper can do it straight on a CNN video, and I don't think much will happen. Klain Music says, dude, Mike Tyson is on Rogan, and even though Rogan tries to evade the Ukraine topic, Tyson forces it, and it's what I've been waiting for. Okay, but what is the Tyson position on Ukraine? I'll go check the interview after the show. I've not seen it today. All right, we had a couple of questions that came to me later yesterday after the show, so I will be reading those super chats. First, there was Tin. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He sent $15. He says, is it possible to genetically engineer a polar bear so that it and all of its descendants are incapable of breeding with grizzly bears? Could the same be done for different species or subspecies? And could it be done in human races? So the grizzly polar bear hybrid exists. It's a very rare event, though. But his question is, could I insert a gene that would make it so that the grizzly polar bear hybrid doesn't happen? The answer is yes. There is a tool called Gene Drive. It's been applied in mosquito. You could apply something like this. Now, it's in principle, yes. However, there would be lots of difficulties, and it would be very different from mosquitoes. So what we had done in mosquitoes was you just make it, you make a gene such that the descendants of the mosquito of a given sex will not be able to have babies. Now, you can do that in a single species, but you could do it for the polar bear grizzly hybrid. All you would have to do to add this layer of complexity, the gene that triggers sterility would only be triggered if it or it could even trigger death of the embryo. It could trigger death of the embryo if it detects a grizzly bear gene. And if it detects only polar bear genes, it doesn't trigger it. So you can make conditionals like this. However, we've never done that in bears, and it would there would be serious complications. The problem being, you need a couple of generations to make this happen. Just a basic genetic modification, I believe you need up to, at the very minimum, two generations to eventually get what you want. Here's the problem. We have tools to modify one of the genomes, and then we have no way to modify the other part of the diploid genome. So what we do, we make a lot of babies. We take the mice, make them have babies, make them have babies with their babies. And eventually, at some generation, you end up having some of the mice that have the two versions of the gene that you modified. Now, if you were to do this with polar bears, that means hosting 2 to 3 generations of polar bears in captivity so that you so that you get the final polar bear, which, so that's why we do research on mice and mosquitoes. It's a much smaller generation time. Yes, Grapes Coda says F1, F2. I remember these terms, man. And I've never done it because it was never my field, but I've had to learn all of this. Oh my God. I don't like this. I don't like the technical aspects of it. It's like, oh, you have to put the mice in the cage and do this, and then have the mice have baby with this one. It's there are some PhDs who go full autist and who do that for years and years and years. I wouldn't do that, and it would be very long to do in polar bears. and then you ask the question, would that be possible in human races or different species? Definitely, the same could be possible, but again, with the complication, you would need two generations to get to your ideal individual with the two versions of your modified gene, and then you would get only to test it then. So it would be a project of decades before you even get to an effect. The optimistic pessimist sends a super chat on Odyssey. Thank you so much. Odyssey is my favorite platform for super chats. If you would like to support the show, click the dollar button when you send your chat. I really enjoy the Odyssey super chats. Or if you'd like an alternative, we are on Entropy. The link is in the description below. And tonight our survey on Entropy is, will CNN retract the statement by Taper? I don't know. I don't think they will. I think they're going to say, you know what, let's let it pass. There were so many memes at that moment that were claiming that. And anyways, who's going to come to the defense of Russians, you know? I think that they're becoming anti-Russians just like they were anti-Trump. The optimistic pessimist sends a super chat. He says, do you completely reject kin selection or multi-level selection theory? Those are two very different theories. Although they are, and I'll very soon do the Frank Salter book review, so I'll be able to say more about this. I'll make a full show about it. And it is claimed by people like Frank Salter that basically you can take whatever you would think of kin selection and just extrapolate it at whatever levels of kin, including the nation, the race, or whatever. I do not completely reject the concept of kin selection. I think it's overemphasized, and I think there are alternative explanations that make it very often you don't need the kin selection explanation to explain human behavior in a collaborative way happening in the family. Here's the thing. most situations of cooperation are advantageous to the two partners cooperating, no matter whether they are brothers or not brothers. And it is very often easier to collaborate with someone who's behaviorally compatible, and your brother is more likely to be behaviorally compatible with you than your distant cousin or a stranger. For these reasons, the genetic self-interest, to me, is very often sufficient to explain the vast majority of what people claim needs some kind of kin selection hypothesis. Misfirings can often explain what is claimed to be kin selection. So here's the first degree of denial. One moment. Let me drink something here to clear my voice. So the first degree of rejection is, you know, very often the collaboration that they engage in, you don't collaborate with your brother so that you help your brother have babies. You collaborate with your brothers because we live in an environment where collaboration is advantageous to the self. And it's also advantageous to the other guy. But you don't have to have evolved to help the other guy. You may just have evolved to collaborate because it's good for you. I think with only this, you can explain basically 99% of the cases that are invoked as, oh my god, we need kin selection. There's another level that I object. It's been done classically by Richard Dawkins, but it's not something that I often hear by lots of other people. Richard Dawkins claims very often that the reason the cells in our bodies don't need to be reproducing, they don't all fight to be the sperm or the egg, is that they are the kin of the sperm cell and the egg cell. Because they share genes with the sperm or egg cell, they don't revolt. I don't think that that's the explanation. I've detailed what I think is the explanation. I think that Richard Dawkins is correct in establishing the concept of a dead-end phenotypic cell. What I call them is embedded replicators. Basically, the cells in our body are embedded replicators in that they can make copies of themselves, but they are the phenotype of the gene line, of the germline cells, as Dawkins would call them. You don't need to invoke the fact that they share DNA genes with the sperm cell because the phenotype is always submissive toward the germline cells, whether it has the genes or not. So think about other pieces of our phenotype that do not have DNA. Consider furniture, everything around us, our houses. All of this is part of our phenotype, but it doesn't carry DNA, and yet it is very submissive to our reproduction and submissive to our interest. So basically, and Richard Dawkins had also been invoking kin selection to explain the dedication of the sterile workers to queen ants. I believe that the same is true here. You don't need kin selection. You can very well say the sterile worker is the phenotype of the queen, therefore it will be submissive to the queen, whether it carries its genes or not. So there's a subtle difference here between Dawkins and me, and it's that in Dawkins, the sterile worker is submissive because it has the genes of the queen. In my case, the sterile worker is submissive because it's a phenotype of the queen, and it carries the genes of the queen, but that's an accident. That's just the best way the queen found to make sterile workers. And then you find yourself at the third level of the problem with kin selection, which is, and I'm not final on this, I have to complete the reading of Frank Salter's book, because maybe he will convince me, maybe there is something in there in the pages I haven't read yet, and it's going to change my view on this. But for now, up to what I've read, and I've read more than half now, those people who claim that kin selection can be expanded to the level of society, race, and what even species and even family, like supra-species levels of groupings, they fail at showing one element that you have to show when you talk about kin selection, which is how does the altruistic gene distinguish between parasites and generin, genetic linkage. We have the explanation at the brother and sister level. When you spend the entire your entire childhood with someone else, it's likely your brother, and therefore your genes have a way readily to establish with some good probability, this is my brother. And it also has a way to establish that someone is not your brother. If you see someone for the first time that you've never seen before, your genes can tell the difference, your brain can tell the difference. This is a foreigner. Now, this happens often enough in the tribal state of humanity that I would believe that it can matter, which is why I don't fully deny the existence of kin selection. Kin selection requires genetic resemblance, but it requires that the life form is able to tell the difference between the genetic resemblance and not. I'm not sure that we have enough interracial interactions in our evolutionary history for the last million years that we would have developed kin selection at the race level. Imagine, I mean, you have how many times does a tribe of Europeans 2,000 years ago encounter Africans? Maybe zero. Maybe most of them will not ever see an African ever in their entire existence. Maybe 99% of the Europeans of 100,000 years ago had met a black African, had not met a black African. So if you don't meet enough of the contrast between those who are linked to you and those who are not linked to you, then an evolutionary explanation involving kin selection cannot work. So what do we have then? Why? And this is what Edward Dutton will come and say. That's what he said when he was on the show. He tells you, well, JF, we can record people psychologically, and they do differentiate between Africans and Europeans. And they do have differing levels of trust for the races. Now, the problem is you've moved from the evolutionary explanation to just a statement of facts and description of the current cognition of humans. And my problem with this is I can find alternative explanations for why you would trust differentially Asians, whites, and Africans that does not involve an explanation rooted in kin selection. First, here it is. So here is one explanation that doesn't involve kin selection. Suppose that you have genetic drift in the two populations. This genetic drift is such that it changes your phenotype, but in a way that is not subject to natural selection. Just a kind of drift away from the common ancestor. And you have this across all life forms. Genetic drift is a thing. Suppose that the genetic drift of humans in Europe and humans in Africa leads them to develop different phenotypes enough that eventually the genes for sexual selection catch up and they start developing preferences for the locals, of course, because they never meet the foreigners. So the genes are stuck in Africa and they're stuck in Europe, and they're like, okay, this is what a woman looks like and this is what a man looks like. But the gene stuck in Africa is like, this is what a man looks like and this is what a woman looks like. And so you end up having differential evolution, say the size of the ass, and the genes are like, okay, this is the size of a human ass. And the genes out there are like, no, this is the size of a human ass. And eventually, you have two populations that end up preferring different sizes of ass, and there it's not because the ass is your kin, it's not because the ass is reflective of your kin, it's not because you've been given the opportunity in your evolutionary story to choose between big ass and small ass. It's just that at a certain point in your evolution, your genes started recording whatever was the local norm and started being making you attracted to it. You could have the same for any sort of distrust of the foreigner. Distrust of the foreigner could simply be the genes failing to identify the other person as a human likely of collaborating, simply because the genes have been habituated to a certain color of skin, a certain body shape, and what you see in front of you in a world where there are planes, in a world where everyone travels everywhere, in that world, you end up encountering things that your genes have never seen before. Because of all these oppositions, I think there's not a single place where kin selection is needed as an explanation. There's not a single place where I can't think of something else. Now, that could be a good challenge for anyone. If you want to go out there and find me something that kin selection is the only thing that can explain it without, and where there's no alternative explanation. We had another super chat that I had said I would listen to it. I did listen to it. Political Ponerology by Andrew Lobachowski. So it's a book, but I watched the whole video of 1 hour 25 describing the book. I'm not super charmed by the theory. It's a theory that's just written on the side of the table. Like, it's not a theory that's grounded in science and empiricism. It's just a guy who ended up facing the political police of the Nazis and the communists, and who decided to write a theory about the genesis of evil in human society. He's trying to make a sociology of evil, of political evil. And as I've said, I wasn't warm to the idea to begin with, because there's no such thing as evil. It's not a fact. Evil is a moral preference. It's a label that is subjective in nature. It's not subject to verification, not a subject of science. It's a subject of human perception. So already we are in the domain of human perceptions. And when you look at the heart of his theory, it is that there are different types of disease. There are different types of disorders in the human population, and everyone has just a little levels of disorder. And this one is a little bit schizoid. This one is a lot schizoid. This one is a little bit narcissist. This one is a lot narcissistic. And then he has a whole theory that these players in the human ecology invade institutions either first or later, and that this enables the development of the institutions. For example, he thinks that there are some non-pathological people who can create an institution like communism, and then it can be taken over by the schizoid pathologicals, and eventually they can be kicked out of the institution by the narcissistic pathologicals. And there's nothing to support this view. It's just puff in the air theory out there. I'm not even saying that this couldn't be interesting. I think that there's an interest if you were able to record these things properly. But I barely believe that we have an appropriate population quantification allowing to even test this theory in the current days. And his theory was written decades ago. So political Ponerology is misguided, misguided in every possible way. To begin with, it touches subjects that are not subject to empiricism at all, and to talk of them factually is already an error. And secondly, those measures of paranoid, schizoid, and schizotypical personality. All of it is extremely loose, poorly defined. I don't even believe we have proper data on these things. I think they are just notes for psychiatrists to categorize things that not in a very efficient way. Thomas Howard says, I am doubtful on JF's denial of the existence of evil. I will propose a thought experiment. Surely JF can imagine a universe where evil exists. I'm sure his intellect is not so limited to make this impossible. Well, what is evil? You can give a specific definition of evil, which will correspond to facts. You can say, okay, evil is someone who enjoys the suffering of others. But then, by this standard, there are some people who are evil, who are actually necessary for society. There is some amount of suffering that is needed for society to function. And at the very least, if I gave you the opportunity of chopping the part of your brain that causes suffering, you wouldn't take it. So you like evil, you like suffering to some extent, because you recognize the use of suffering for the theory of it, for evolution to happen. And so you like your own suffering, so you're evil against yourself. That's the problem. No matter how you define evil, it's going to lead to non-factual, contradictory findings. And people never inspect these words properly. But I did, and I consider that evil is a human perception. It's a human label. It can mean different things, and so it's equivocating in between different things. It's not a thing. And whatever you want to define as a thing, it will have all the defects of any moral preference, which is that it will be arbitrary, because I'm a moral nihilist. It will have no grounding except the axioms that you want to give it. And it will have circular, self-contradicting conclusions to it. The optimistic pessimist says, Jeff, what about multi-level selection? You didn't address if you reject it. Oh yeah, so that's a totally different case where I totally reject multi-level selection. If you think that that's a different thing than natural selection. Now, if you say there's multi-level selection, JF, in the sense that the population around a life form influences how this life form's genes evolve. If you say this, like, okay, let's say that there are some bacteria that will evolve in a certain direction if they're surrounded by a million bacteria, but they will evolve in a totally different direction if they are in a diluted environment where there's no bacteria around. But that's just evolution. Now, you can say, well, Jeff, that's multi-level selection. Because don't you see how the group of bacteria influences how the bacteria evolves? That's amazing. It's multi-level selection. It's the group of bacteria that's getting selected. No. As Richard Dawkins stated it beautifully, from the perspective of a gene, the other genes are the environment. That is a profound truth. From the perspective of a replicator, the other replicators are the environment. And that is true for a single letter of DNA with respect to the rest of the molecule of DNA. And it's true for a single letter of DNA in a molecule of DNA, in a species, in a group, in a tribe, whatever you want. So what people don't realize is that there are already group dynamics implied by the basic theory of gene-centered natural selection. Gene-centered natural selection is in no way denying the group dynamics that can happen. And it is definitely recognizing that a different group is a different environment that will lead to different genes surviving. Now, once you've stated this, there's not much space left for multilevel selection. But the typical claim of multilevel selection, group selection, the typical claim is that there is a selection process. The theory of evolution applies to groups as groups get selected and groups survive, and therefore groups thrive according to group characteristics such as altruism. And that ultimately this is a good explanation for certain human features such as culture and altruism. And the big problem there is that the so-called selection that applies to group doesn't have all of the ingredients of natural selection. It's missing one thing, the replicator. Because the only way you can replicate a human group is by having them make babies. And the ones who make babies will be transmitting their genes. So you're down to, well, you're back to the replicator. You're back to the gene. And you have a theory that is only different in label and that doesn't have its way. The typical way in which they see it, the people who propose group selection, they think of human groups as seeding other human groups. And a human group that has high altruism survives, succeeds at beating the enemy, and will seed other groups by seeding babies. And these other groups will be altruistic because they will inherit the altruistic capacities of the groups that seeded them. And they will win, and therefore there will be more groups with more altruism. The problem with this is that none of this happens without genes. And therefore, you might as well say, this is genes. This is, and the genes of the seeder of the group is merely the most efficient gene. The gene that makes you say, I'm going to leave this group and I'm going to seed my own group to create another tribe. That is simply the migration gene. It's the gene that has to make a decision. Okay, is there too much people in my current tribe? And do I have better interest at exploring a more empty environment and seed a different tribe? Yes. For a group to really have multi-level selection in a way that is not congruent to gene selection, you'd have to have a mechanism for group replication that is not gene derived. There is none. Thomas Howard says, would a moral nihilist judge a vegan causing an entire species of chicken to be genocided through their advocacy of the vegan lifestyle to be a sort of evil? How firm is your conviction in nihilism, JF? The answer is, first, my position in the vegan argument was an intellectual position. I wasn't emotionally involved in saving the chicken from the genocide. I may have made it look like I was emotional about it, but I was not. Second, a moral nihilist can have emotions, and a moral nihilist, the fact that you adhere to moral nihilism is a meta-ethical claim. It has nothing to do with your moral preferences. You can be a nihilist and hate murder. You can be a nihilist and hate rape. You're just conscious that your hating of murder and your hating of rape is a personal preference and that you don't have an argument to force someone else to be like you. All right, let's get to the Jake Tapper lie. I made a arguably.io article about it. The claim is that Russia lied about the sinking of the Moskva. So there was the sinking of this ship. Initially, the ship, there was a fire on the ship, and there were ammunitions exploding. And the Russians have published a statement during the fire. And they have said, we are investigating the cause of the fire. We don't know yet. Currently, the ship has not sunk, and we are trying to tow it to save it. Now, That's not a denial that the fire could have been caused by a missile. Yet, for more than a day now, we have seen on social media the pro-Ukraine people misrepresent Russia, misrepresent Vladimir Putin, to make people believe that somehow Russia is denying that the ship has been hit by a missile. And I waited because I wanted to see, will this be caught by good journalists, by like prestigious journalists, or is it just a thing of the internet and people are just stupid? Well, in the Zelensky interview, Jake Tapper did it. Look at what he says. I think so.
The Moskva, the one that Ukrainian soldiers told to F off, sank. The Russians say, and the Russians are liars, but the Russians say it sank on its own.
This is not journalism. The Russians are liars. Well, the lie that you're claiming they did in that interview, they didn't do. So I'm bound to find that perhaps the Russians are not liars. Like, who starts a question like that? The Russians say, and the Russians are liar, but they say, they really want to present Russians as systemic liar, and we can't trust what they have to say. And in the end, he's trying to throw a softball question to Zelensky, and he shouldn't even have to respond because Russians always lie. Let's re-listen.
I think so.
The Moskva, the one that Ukrainian soldiers told to F off, sank. The Russians say, and the Russians are liars, but the Russians say it sank on its own. Can you offer some clarity and evidence as to what happened to that ship?
We know that it does not exist anymore.
So the claim is that the Russians claim it sank on its own. However, the Russians never said this. Here's the two statements of the Russians represented in The Guardian and in CNN. In The Guardian, Russia's defense ministry said it was investigating what had happened, but denied report that it had sunk. So that was a statement during while the boat had not yet sinked. So if it didn't sink yet and you say we deny that it sunk, you are correct. And claimed the fires had been extinguished. Four Russian ships that had gone to the Moskva's rescue were being hampered by stormy weather and by ammunition blowing up on board, it said. And then the representation of the earlier statement by CNN. Russia has put out its own version of events. Russia's defense ministry says a fire of unknown origin detonated the ship's stored ammunition, and the resulting explosions left the Moskva with structural damage. It says the warship then sank amid rough seas as it was being towed to a nearby port. There's no denial here there's no claim that the ship sinked by itself, as Jake Tapper claims. Didn't happen. The Russians are saying there's a fire, it's of unknown origin. Well, unknown origin is inclusive of the possibility that it was a Ukrainian missile. All of this crap, all of this lie by Jake Tapper comes from a mimetic culture of misinformation on the left that includes memes like this. Our ship is not really sinking, it's a special underwater operation. There were memes like this all day long yesterday. The leftists were memeing so hard that Russia is denying that the boat is sinking, that even Jake Tapper at CNN didn't take the time to look at the original Russian statement. The original Russian statement doesn't say the boat is not sinking. It says it has not sunk yet. And then the later statement says there was a fire of unknown origin. None of this is a denial of the possibility of a Ukrainian missile. And so I have recorded at arguably.io, my website, which is, I want arguably.io to be a notepad for all of our arguments, for all of our fact checks, of the mainstream media. I want us to take note of all the lies that are being said and take very clear list of who got it wrong, when it happened, why it's wrong, and I want this website to be unquestionable and high quality in terms of the arguments. So it's still a website that I've just opened on the side. I'm not working very often, but today I was tempted at adding something to it, and anyone can add stuff to it also. It's running on my private server right here beside me. So we have freedom of speech as we wouldn't have if we were at Wikipedia. Thomas Howard says, I'm almost certain JF would agree that the agent who causes the invocation of TRP to be an agent of evil. Again, so you guys are annoying. You know that moral nihilism is a meta-ethical claim. It is a statement that says moral beliefs and preferences are not objectively derived. That's it. So there is no incompatibility between being a moral nihilist and thinking that TRP is evil. There's none. So leave me alone. Stop acting like there's some sort of contradiction. There is none. Leave me alone. I can believe consistent sets of beliefs, and I want to stop being annoyed about it. It's like you guys are, and you know, because you've been watching this show for so long, Thomas Howard. You know what's my whole statement about this? I've said it 100 times. Shut the fuck up with your perceptions of contradictions where there are none. Okay? You can say the taste of vanilla ice cream is not objectively derived. And yet you can say, I love vanilla ice cream. Is there any contradiction here? No, there's none. Because you've recognized that it was a subjective preference, and then you say, I have that damn subjective preference. So shut the fuck up! John Jay sends a super chat. He says, yo, what's up, dog? Yo, I'm doing great. Except when people... And oh, I have sworn on Good Friday. I had forgotten that this is Easter and that we are celebrating rabbits and eggs. I apologize to the rabbits and the eggs. I didn't remember that the rabbit doesn't like us swearing. Sorry. I had forgotten the sense of Easter, which is painted eggs and rabbits. Sorry to the rabbits, sorry to the painted eggs. I've been sent this little fiction movie. I'm not super warm to the idea of fiction, but I'm willing to give it some exposure because it's about... It's an anti-mandate film, and so he's kind of presenting a situation of a guy who's with his girlfriend, and his girlfriend is asking him to go get the vaccine, and it's presented like a horror movie, and it's funny because in the end it's what's happening to a lot of guys. A lot of guys are doing it for their females, and their females are constraining guys to get it so that they can get the social benefits of the vaccine passport. Say no to female control over your life. Stand unvaccinated and proud. But here, let me copy the link to this fiction, this little short fiction. Thanks for keeping me safe. And look at the thumbnail. I've put it in the chat. Look at the thumbnail. It's like a woman. It's like a nurse. I'm doing it for your safety. It's scary. It's scary. Thankfully, I've attained enough liberty in my life that I don't have to cuck. But there are times in my life where I would have had to cuck. There are times in my life where there was no way for me to work from home, I may have been constrained at getting the vaccine. One moment. All right, the conflict is progressing slowly. We've seen a lot of shooting down of drones. We've seen drones being shot on the Russian side in Luhansk, and we've seen some around Odessa. We've seen some strikes. There was some strikes around Kiev, which were presented as a response to the attacks that are done on Russian territory. We have also seen a warning by Russia to the US that the consequences of giving weapons to the Ukrainians would be unpredictable. Was this a reference to a nuclear attack? I don't know. But that is what they have said up to now. We've also had a development on the Twitter Elon Musk story. Twitter board adopts poison pill to thwart Musk takeover, exposing itself to titanic legal liability. The poison pill, the strategy that I described on yesterday's show, has been adopted by Twitter. It's a very unfair thing, because the goal of a poison pill is to dilute the voting power if someone wants to aggressively purchase the company. But they've made it such that basically they're going to give rebates on shares that you can buy if Elon Musk attains 15% of the takeover. So if Elon Musk buys 6% more, the mechanism will be triggered, and basically the big players, the big banks, will be able to buy Twitter stock at 50% rebate. Now, this is totally unfair for those people who currently own stocks. I think, and I believe that this is why poison pill often lead to lawsuits. Because think about Tim Pool. He has 22 shares of Twitter. Tim Pool will get diluted in this process. And there is some justification to believe that this whole thing is being used as an opportunity to dilute the small players in Twitter. So the consequence of this poison pill may not be only to protect Twitter from Elon Musk. It may be, in the end, to allow a complete overtake of the of Twitter by even more corporate entities, even more censoring entities. It's disgusting. I hope that Elon Musk knows what he's doing and that he has planned this and he has a plan to address this, perhaps another platform or perhaps some strategy to continue the offer process. Now, the Twitter board did not deny the offer. They said, we need time. We need to negotiate. We need to hear about offers. So there are many possibilities moving forward from here. There could be Twitter saying, we're going to solicit other offers. So some other big player may say, we're going to pay you more than Elon Musk to buy the company. They might also tell Elon Musk, we want more than $43 billion, in which case Elon Musk has already said it was his last offer. So who knows what will be his response to this. Or the Twitter board might just delay for the purpose of delaying, just so that we never get to resolve this. Perhaps not even get a vote from their shareholders. And that would be a strategy that they do if they're really not interested at being bought out. I think it's very disgusting. Because it's ultimately a bunch of technocrats who have taken over speech in America who are protecting their place in the speech control business. This is a racket. This is criminal, what's happening. But it's what's happening. If you want to go theoretical, in principle, Musk should just be able to buy the shares he wants. There shouldn't be the possibility of a company to react to this, because if he has enough shares, he represents within the democratic structure of the company he represents, enough power to make a decision. But they're using this dirty strategy. Hopefully, there will be lawsuits. Hopefully, there's a couple of shareholders who will say, uh-uh, we're not getting diluted by people who hate us and who want ultimately to deprive us from basically getting free money from Elon Musk. That's what it is. Tower of Bones sends a super chat. He says, when's Putin getting blackpilled on the whole situation and launching ICBMs? I was asking the same question yesterday. What the fuck is happening with Putin? Why don't we see a stronger stance? Why don't we see stronger attacks? I don't know what he's thinking. People have been calming me down and they've been saying, JF, he's just measuring the enemy. He's testing how a nation funded by the American Empire can fuck him up. Maybe he's just sampling like this, probing. I'm willing to accept this for now, but to me, I was very clear at the beginning of this conflict. Putin should have prepared a conflict that would get basically everything cut in terms of transportation possibilities, in terms of reinforcement, reapprovisioning. This should all have been cut on the first day, and within just a week, you know, everything should have been cut out. But he didn't succeed at doing that, so. Or maybe he didn't want that, and maybe the cutout was just in Mariupol because he cares about Mariupol. And maybe it was just in Kherson because Kherson is all he wants. So I'm not telling you necessarily that he's taking the wrong path, but this is not the path I would have taken. Twitter adopts poison pill in response to Elon Musk offer. So there we go. What will happen? I do not know. Go away, says Jeff. Sun Tzu says, look weak when you are strong. The problem with these sayings is that they can disconnect you seriously from reality. I mean, this whole thing, look weak when you are strong, this is something you would hear in MAGA, QAnon type of circles of people who believed that Trump was still the president and still in control of the army 4 months ago. Let alone a year ago. I mean, 4 months ago, they would say, yeah, it's August 17th. It's happening. That's the problem with this saying. If you have an empirical approach where you can explain everything that you observe, even contradictory observations with, oh, well, it's in the plan. It's all in the plan. It's all part of the plan. You will eventually divorce from a reality. Defined says, so Jeff, you're looking at the conflict and saying that that's Putin putting it lightly. Putin it likely. Yes, that's my conclusion. Putin is approaching this conflict with a soft, bare approach. And perhaps it's the best thing. Perhaps, you know, it's within the means of the Russian Federation. That's the best thing to do. I'm not enough informed about all of the details of the motivations of Putin to say for sure he's wrong. But he's different than me because I'm a guy, you know how I'm always on time at 7 p.m. Eastern time? You know how, you know the degree of autism needed to make this happen? That's the degree of autism with which I would dominate Ukraine. And it's like there wouldn't be tolerance for being late on anything. At 7 p.m. Eastern time, I start the show. And it would be like, if I was leading a war against Ukraine, I'd be like, at 7 p.m. Eastern time, I want Kiev to be completely destroyed. You tell me what I have to sign, you tell me which buttons I have to push. But that's just how I approach life. Everything needs to be done by 7 p.m. Eastern time. Nearly 100, that's fascinating. 100 people from a New Jersey high school got brain tumors. A survivor demands answers. A cancer survivor is vowing to untangle the twisted mystery of why almost 100 people associated with a New Jersey high school have developed extremely rare malignant brain tumors. Al Lupiano is among the 94 former staff and students from Colonia High School in the Woodbridge Township School District who have been stricken by the devastating diagnosis in recent years. "I will not rest until I have answers," Lupiano, 50, declared in an interview. "I will uncover the truth." Among the others diagnosed with brain cancer was Lupiano's younger sister, who passed away from the disease in February at the age of 44. Was that the case of poisoning with some substance? Was it radioactive? Is it that they have radon in the air? Was there something in the water? It seems like a very specific type. It's a rare malignant brain tumor. So it doesn't look like something you would get from straight out like polonium poisoning or something. Because if you had general radiation syndrome, you might have lots of cancer, but they would be everywhere in the body. Why did it lead to specific brain tumors? You know, I'm going to throw out an hypothesis, but this looks like to me a very specific type of virus or worm or mushroom of some kind. This looks like this has the signature of life to me. But that's just a bet. Don't quote me as an expert. This doesn't look like something was in the air in terms of radioactivity. M says, "Jeff, what is the deal with radon and can it really be anywhere?" Yes, radon is a gas that stems from the ground and it evaporates into the air. The problem being, if you have a house that is not built to evacuate radon, it can accumulate in a basement that is not ventilated and that is not covered enough. Now, I suggest if you are unaware of the level of radon, I suggest not buying the chemical test because it's a one-shot test and you never get to know later. I suggest buying the AirThings device, which I have right here. The AirThings does 6 different recordings, including radon. It gives you VOCs, volatile compounds, CO2. So you get very good measures. You get temperature, humidity. Put this in your house and you'll know at every time in the future how much radon there is. I used it and turns out I have very low levels of radon. Everything is good here. If you do have radon, it's not dramatic. You can have measures to stop it. The whole strategy is wrap the soil of your house, because if radon is in your basement, it means it's coming out of the earth. So below your floor, you want a perfect sealed plastic wrap, just a plastic wrap, and ventilate the bottom of it. So you put the plastic wrap and you ensure that the air is expelled with some mechanism. It can be a bunch of tubes with holes, with a fan. So as long as the radon is trapped below your plastic bag and then it's evacuated, it doesn't accumulate in your house, you're all good. Most of the time you'll just buy the AirThings device and it will just reveal to you that you don't have a radon problem, so you don't have to worry. I'm still waiting at the post office. I'm excited about this one. I'm getting my beta particle reader, you know, Geiger counter. I can't wait to see, because I have the radon reader right now, which tells me I'm safe on the side of radon. But I'd like to have a true Geiger counter so I can measure levels of radiation overall and measure potential nuclear explosions and nuclear power plant leaks or that kind of stuff. So I'm going to get it in a couple of days, I believe. It's coming. I'm very excited about this one. I can't wait to walk around the house or around Mama JF and while she's washing the dishes, I'll be like, measuring everything. Are you safe? Is there radiation in the sink? Is there radiation on the couch? I feel like a child waiting for a Christmas gift. It's going to be awesome. Welcome to the USA. Here's your free phone with a monthly cell phone plan. All paid for by US citizens. Oh, they're giving cell phones to illegal migrants.
Another topic, following up on the smartphones that are being given to border crossers with technology so they can be tracked or so they can check in. Is there any plan to give free smartphones to US citizens that want them?
Should we not be tracking migrants who irregularly cross the border?
I'm asking if...
Or do you have an alternative suggestion for how they should be tracked?
I unfortunately have not been asked to make U.S. immigration policy.
Today's your moment.
Well, it'd be great if anybody that wanted a free phone and a free monthly plan could get one.
So they're giving free phones to illegal migrants, and the excuse is, we have to trace them. But of course, the leftists are not about tracing them. To the contrary, they're very happy that they're running around the US. So it's an excuse to give a kind of covert social welfare gift to illegal migrants. That's what it is. Because if you're really about tracking, why don't you disable the phone and make it just usable for the tracking purpose? Of course, they're not going to do this. They're going to reward the illegal migrants for coming and for propping up the voting basis of the Democrat Party. Biden opens more public land to oil and gas drilling in latest climate policy capitulation. See, this is hurting America, this whole... Oh, well, we had Trump, so people were able to drill. And then Biden comes in and no one's going to be able to drill. And then, oh, there's the Ukraine crisis. Well, now we're able to drill. All of this creates a lot of inefficiency in the system because you have companies not sure, oh my God, are we, all of our equipments, would it serve something or no? And Biden tells them, no, it will serve nothing. No more drilling on federal land, he had said. But now he's opening federal land. It will happen. I mean, it's the right decision to make, but it should have been made just on the first day of the Biden presidency. Like, think about it. Yes, there could be a war. Yes, there could be inflation problems. And yes, there could be a rise of the demand and a lowering of the offer for oil. But now we're all doing it late and people will pay the price for this lateness. Tesla's Shanghai Gigafactory remains closed, has already lost 40,000 EVs due to COVID lockdowns. Thursday's spectacle of Elon Musk's attempt to buy Twitter for about $43 billion has diverted attention from a significant Tesla production snag in China. Bloomberg reports that Tesla Giga Shanghai, a factory operated by Tesla Inc. in Shanghai, China, which produces Model 3 and Model Y vehicles, has had production lines shuttered for nearly 3 weeks due to citywide lockdowns to control the spread of COVID. Well, 40,000 less Tesla in existence. I can deal with it because I think it's an overpriced car. Although I respect Elon Musk and I like the whole idea of energy independence for vehicles and self-production, Tesla isn't there yet. Tesla is overpaid crap, overpriced illusion of energy independence. Because if you end up paying more for your independent energy than you do for any energy, then you have nothing to gain in energy independence. And if you pay more for the big battery, the power wall, instead of any equivalent battery on the market, then you're really just paying for a gadget and paying for the look. Tillman says, JF, have you seen Patrick Lancaster's latest video in Ukraine? I've seen clips of it. I haven't watched the whole thing yet. Patrick Lancaster has been a really great guy. Oh, yeah, and I've seen that he was talking about the fact that he found in the South, I believe he's in Mariupol or somewhere around there, he found evidence of people with their hands tied in their back killed, but not certainly not by the Russian forces, on territory that was freshly discovered by the Russian forces. And the whole idea is, you know, when you see that pattern, it may be the Azov battalion, it may be the Ukrainian army that does this to people that they estimate are traitors or saboteurs. Go away, sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, the Obama phone initiative was put in place to increase smartphone use amongst African Americans, as this was necessary for their implementation of the domestic color revolution operation that was BLM. I wonder what Biden is planning with the border crosser phones. That is a very good analysis. I had never thought about it, but there's been massive efforts, and we've seen similar efforts in Ukraine. You know, sending these women who they have these little stands, and they're making a workshop on how to use social media. And I was like, how is that a government issue? Like, you're promoting smartphones and social media in Ukraine. And now that you tell me this, I see the exact type of pattern here. So they did it in Ukraine for the actual color revolution. They did it with BLM, and now they're doing it with illegal migrants. The whole idea of the more you introduce means of communication, and these means of communication have been pre-censored against the right wing and basically advantage for left-wing ID. Basically, yeah. And to a certain extent, isn't it the same thing that happened with the Arab Spring? With Twitter, you know how they were all crazy about, oh my God, it's amazing that the Muslim people are liberating themselves using Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I mean, I remember there was this fad, like, I was on Twitter before that. I remember this fad of leftist liberal coming onto Twitter and saying, it's so wonderful how Twitter is a tool of liberty for the people in these Muslim countries. So basically, they're engineering society for liberal revolution. Wow. And it all comes from the same source. It always traces back to a bunch of banks, a bunch of big tech giant owners, a bunch of fucking CEOs, and a bunch of George Soros type people. And they're doing it across the races. Isn't that amazing? They're doing it with the Arab Springs. They're doing it with the color revolutions. They're doing it with BLM. And then they're doing it with the border crossers. Ariel Soares says, border crossers, laughing my ass off. Oh yeah, we'll remember that there was one border you cannot cross. And it's the border between what, Wisconsin and whatever border Kyle Rittenhouse. The state lines have been crossed by Kyle Rittenhouse that day. There's an excellent text at Academic Agent, the forbidden text at Substack, assessing the alternatives to clear them out. He's talking about how do we take back institutions. I think it's delusion, because I think you're not going to take back institutions. The leftists are way too powerful. They've taken over and they're not giving up. Just like Elon Musk will not take back Twitter, okay? But I still like the theory of it. Yeah, it was Illinois. He crossed the border of Illinois. That's one border you cannot cross in your... You're not going to get a cell phone as a reward. Daryl says, I'm going to cruise. This was an hilarious meme. This was the 38-year-old border cruiser, state line cruiser, and he had a little leg. Oops, I'm cruising. That was the one of the most hilarious memes I can remember in my life. Academic agent says you can retake the institutions through infiltration. You can focus on electoral politics and vote them all, or you can build alternative communities akin to Trumpton. Yeah. It's the three choices. I just think the war is lost. There's not going to be a war of persuasion won by the right. Simply not going to happen. Moscow warns US in diplomatic letter, arming Ukraine to result in unpredictable consequences. I've already talked about this, but that's what it is. And one last news item before we close the show. California balks on vax mandate for school children will delay until at least July 2023. They have been bluffing, and I've been saying it, that a lot of what you see in terms of vaccine rules were going to be bluff, and I was right. It's disgusting because it's bluff made with the intent of extorting a medical decision against people's will under threat that you won't have access to service ABC. Not only do they dare do this extortion, they dare do it deceptively. It's like the extortion subject is not even real. There's not going to be a vax mandate in California for children, but it doesn't matter. All of the good liberal parents have already imposed the vaccine on their liberal children. And that's why I'm blackpilled. It's like we lost the culture war so strong. So strong that they don't even have to be truthful. They're just playing with us. Will CNN retract the statement by Taper? Only one person voted tonight. But it's okay because I really want to transfer to Odyssey as a main platform for Super Chat. So I'm seeing less and less Super Chats on Entropy, and that's fine. Not that I'm dropping Entropy under the bus, but they've chosen not to program their stuff specifically for Odyssey. So you can't watch me there. So you have to go there just for sending a Super Chat. So it's understandable that people are not going there as much as they're now using directly Odyssey, and it's better. It's better because there's so much more money that gets to me, and much more money that also gets to Odyssey. To give you an idea, with Entropy, I get 85% of the money. Entropy keeps 15%, and probably from that 15%, 4% or something like this gets to the credit card company or the Stripe company or whatever they use. With Odyssey, I get 92% of the money. So out of $1,000, I get $920. $50 gets to Odyssey, and only $30 gets taken in fee. So basically, you help Odyssey when you send a super chat on Odyssey. You waste less money because the fees are the lowest in the whole business. And then much more money gets to me than anything else. Go Away says 92%. How does Odyssey make money? Well, I received a $1,000 super chat from Jan. He sent me $2,000 super chat. That was wonderful. They've taken $30 in fees. That's super great. That's like 3%. And they've taken $50 for Odyssey. So Odyssey gets his cut so that they can pay for their server and their amazing programming team. And 92% of the money gets to me, $920. Isn't that wonderful? I like it. Much love. See you all tomorrow.